devoted to those who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that they've become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. I am Yada. Our number normally for these shows is toll-free for you to participate, but today I'm coming to you not live, but that doesn't mean I'm dead either. No, we pre-recorded this program for you yesterday, for you to hear today, we did so because I am now on the road, moving from Central California to Virginia, with a stopover in Ohio en route to enjoy family. Because this is a Friday program, we're going to begin today with the Torah. For those who listened to yesterday's show, you know that Kirk and I made our way through a significant portion of a marvelous statement from Yahweh. It says, "And a son of 8 days you shall circumcise, you shall separate for the approach of every male, for them to approach throughout your dwelling places and generations, for those naturally born in the home, but also for those really wanting to be acquired and included, who are the sons of every foreign land, who relationally are not from your seed." And what we determined in yesterday's program is that each stroke that comprised each of the letters, that compose each of the words, that provide us with these insights into Yahweh's guidance are brilliantly scribed. The first of these says, "and," which means to increase and to secure, to enlarge a home, a son, which is a child born into a family with the inheritance and all that is to be gained by that home. Of 8, which is based on the Hebrew word meaning olive oil, from Shemona, meaning Shamem, which is nourishing words, provide cleansing. They provide life, enabling the birth of a child, the nun, the sperm, the birth of a child into a family that is enabled to reach up, to grasp Yah's hand, to walk with him. That's what the letters communicate. That a son of 8 days, Yomem, is Yahweh's hand securing and enlarging his home. It is Yahweh's hand providing cleansing and life. Yomem, days. That brings us into a position of warmth and of light. You shall circumcise. You shall separate. You shall cut. Creating a division, you shall set apart, mul, you should circumcise, for the purpose of approaching by way of the shepherd, law. Law is the shepherd's staff that leads and protects and guides those sheep that are part of the flock. Every male. Doesn't say males up to the point of Paul. It doesn't say, okay, Timothy, but not Titus. It says every male. Every male. It doesn't say just Jewish males. It doesn't say just Israelite males. It says every male. And the term male here, you know, we're already designated male because Ben means son. The Hebrew word for son is a child born with an inheritance into the family, and living in the home is B-N, Ben. So we're already designated male. Why would Yahweh have to say every male again? Because the word he chose for male isn't Enosh, which means mortal. It isn't Adam, which means man. It isn't Ish, which means individual. No, he chose Zakar. And the actionable, verbal basis of Zakar is to remember, to memorialize. He's trying to memorialize the covenant so that we can remember it. Because it is life and death. It is relationship versus separation. He wants us to remember every aspect of this covenant. And so he chose the concept of separation at the vital point of the human anatomy, where men and women come together to become not only husband and wife joined as one in marriage, but come together to become father and mother. The impetus of family, the genesis of family, where a child is born into that family to be loved, to be lifted up, to be nourished, to be protected, to be guided, to be empowered, to be enriched. All of those things, so that we can enjoy one another's company, all are symbols for exactly what Yahweh is trying to achieve with his covenant family. And he wants us to remember, Zakar, you are every male, for them to remember. And this we do to enable them to approach by way of the shepherd, Lah, throughout your dwelling places and generations' door. So is this something that you just do in Yisrael when the children of Yisrael, having been liberated from the human oppression, religious and political and military and economic oppression in the crucible of Egypt, are walking with Yahweh? Or is this something that you don't just do in the wilderness? You don't just do in the promised land? Didn't he just say throughout your dwelling places and generations? That would be all time, all places. That's what door means. Door is comprised of three letters in Hebrew. The first of the three letters is the delet. It is a doorway. The doorway here is into God's home, into the promised land, into his family. The law speaks of being enriched, being empowered, being added to, being made secure, being enlarged, if you will. You know, we're going to go from three dimensions stuck in time to seven dimensions. Each dimensional increase is infinite in terms of its possibilities for us, its potential to us. We're going to walk into the presence of the light. We're going to be enlightened. All of these things are additive, which is what the law conveys. So it's the doorway that enables us to be enriched and secured and empowered. For those who are observant, the resh, those who use their eyes to read what Yahweh has conveyed, their ears to listen to what he has to say, their brains to process this so that we come to understand it, and then our mouths so that we can respond. That's dwelling places and generations' door. All of your households, all of your extended families, all of your living places. And it's not just for the naturally born, the Yalid, those naturalized as a member of the extended family through natural childbirth in your home. So in our Beth home, and Beth home family is the basis of Beth covenant. It's the only difference between Beth and Bereth. Beth mean family and home. It's the B in Hebrew. It's also the name of the letter B in Hebrew. It's drawn as the picture of a family home. And Bereth, which is Yahweh's family, is an observant individual in the middle of it. Beth is Ben, family home. Yad, Yahweh's hand, which reaches down to lift us up, to guide us into the home. And then the Teth, which is Yahweh's signature on it, that those who come into Yahweh's home by reaching for Yahweh's hand have his signature, his name, written on us. And if you add the Rosh to family home, in this case you add the observant individual, the person who is using their eyes to read what God is saying, to examine his every letter of every word, who listen to what he has to say by reciting his words aloud, who process that so they understand it, making the necessary connections begin to understand, and that respond to him. So that's the day at home. And this is for those who are naturally born in the home. That would mean those who are born to covenant members, born to Israelites, born to Yehudim. But circumcision and this covenant isn't just for direct descendants of Abraham and Sarah. It's not just for the descendants of Jacob and Yitzchak before him. There's only one covenant. There's only one God. There's only one set of conditions to participate. There's only one doorway into it. There's only one path to God. And so, everyone who wishes to be part of his family follows the same path, uses the same sign, circumcision, to be part of the same family and live in the same home. There's only for some of these days, you shall circumcise, you shall separate. With regard and for the approach of every male, for them to remember, and for them to approach law throughout your dwelling places and generations, no matter where you live or when you live. And it's for those naturally born, Yaled, as well as those and naturally born in the home, which is the basis of covenant, but also those really wanting to be acquired and included, Kasap, those deeply desiring, strongly yearning, and passionately longing to be purchased and obtained. Speaking of adoption here, this is Mikna of every son of foreign lands who relationally are not from your seed. So, if you are a Goyim, which I am, I'm, best of my knowledge, Sioux Indian and Irish, and I wanted to be part of the covenant. So, there is the opportunity for me to be adopted. This is the concept of adoption. Adoption throughout human history is always about acquiring a child. And for those who are sensitive about this idea that you're buying a life, but that's really what you're doing. And if you are a couple and you either one of the two of you can't conceive a child, you'll very often, many couples go to adoption. And those who have done it know that while you're not actually buying the life, you're acquiring that child. You go to an adoption agency, you hire attorneys, you spend lots of money on the birth mother, and then you spend a small fortune bringing that child home, bringing that child into your family. And prior to us doing it this way, where we kid ourselves about we're not really acquiring the child, we're just paying for everything that the mother needs, the birth mother needs during this process, and we're paying the attorneys, we're enriching everybody along the way, and doing so monetarily. Previously, there wasn't a stigma associated with it. You know, if you didn't have a child, you wanted a child, you could buy a child from a couple who did not have the wherewithal to raise the child but needed income, and you could buy the child. And so that is this concept of adoption has always been about acquisition. And beyond that, there is a secondary symbolism here, and that is that for us to be part of Yahweh's family, for us to be adopted into his family, for us to have our failings forgiven, for Yahweh to see us as perfect, for him to eliminate from us the consequence of our failures, he had to acquire us. He paid a ransom. So Yahweh very much is into the payment business for his children. He paid for every one of us. He paid a ransom. He wanted us to be part of his family, and he personally paid the ransom for us to be part of that family. And this is not a ransom paid with money, not something so trivial. This is a ransom that he paid with great personal sacrifice, not just allowing his creation, who did not know him, to torture him to flay him alive, to execute on his body the most excruciating form of torture and death on that physical body. But then for his soul to go to the place of separation where he said, my God, why have you separated yourself from me? Where the set-apart spirit left Yosha's soul, and his soul went into Sheol, where he paid the price for us to be part of Yahweh's family. So if you have any concern over this exchange of acquiring somebody, giving something valuable to acquire somebody that really wants to be part of your family, understand that's exactly how Yahweh enables all of us to become part of his family. He acquires us. He paid the price. He didn't acquire something trivial like money. No. It was something vastly more precious. And so that's the concept here. Every male that is either naturally born into the family of those who are direct descendants of Abraham and Sarah, the children of Yisrael, and every child throughout all time, in every place, in every generation, who yearns, who longs, who wants to be part of Yah's family. That was me. I wanted to be part of Yahweh's family. I yearned to be part of his family. He ransomed me. He paid the price to adopt me. And that is what is being conveyed here. Circumcision is for all of us. I came from a foreign land. I don't think you could be more foreign to Yisrael than the native tribes of what we now refer to as North America. But it doesn't matter now. I'm adopted. The subtle differences between adoption and being naturally born into a family home. And you know, either way, the parents accept responsibility. But let's talk about adoption for the moment of of the age that they can make decisions, that they can express their desires. And a lot of times men and women will come together where one of them previously had a child, either from a previous marriage or a previous relationship, and the new partner.
You're getting into stuff I know a lot about here.
Yeah, will adopt that child. Yeah, that's your girlfriend, who is now really a common law wife with the time that you've spent together.
Don't tell her that.
Well, that's I know that's reality of that. And her son, you've adopted as your own.
Yeah,
something he wanted, something you wanted.
Yeah, I introduce him as my son. He says to everybody I'm his dad. So yeah. It's a pretty good agreement we have.
Yeah, and you enjoy it. He enjoys it. But
most of it, yeah.
Yeah. This process of adopting when both people choose to do so is what Yah was talking about here. I think that's really special.
Well,
I think it's even more special.
Really, it's the responsibility of it all, and it's a two-way responsibility because he has
right.
When he calls me dad, that comes with some.
Yeah,
that comes with some. That comes with some responsibility for him too.
Yeah.
And it's the same.
Yeah, he's going to listen to what you have to say.
Listen to what I have
he's
to say.
He's going to know that you have some terms and conditions for being part of the family and living in the family home.
Yeah, and you know, don't go out and do stuff that you know I'm not going to. I'm going to be
right.
upset with.
Right.
And,
yeah, and don't call anybody else dad. Yeah, don't call anybody else dad.
Yeah, when you think about it. Yeah, when you think about it, it fits right in with exactly what the covenant is. He's saying Neil can do his own thing,
yeah.
But there are things that are going to make me upset if he goes out and does it.
Yeah, if he finds somebody out there that gives him money and entices him with all forms of entertainment, and he says, you know, that person will do all this stuff for me if I just refer to him as dad, you're going to say it's not acceptable.
Yeah, and if it might be even be the case where, fine, he's your dad now. You go deal with him.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You have separated. And as father, do you have some responsibilities?
More than I've ever had in my life.
Yeah. You're responsible for his protection, his shelter, his clothing, his education, his nourishment, his enlightenment, his character, his ability to make good decisions. Are you responsible for all that, aren't you?
Yeah. I got to show him the right way to do things.
Mind you, somebody else?
Well, unlike somebody else, it's harder for me because I'm not perfect.
Okay.
So, but.
But you, I think it's actually easier for you because you're not perfect. I won't play devil's advocate, but.
Well, you can play
advocate on behalf of perfect. I am a flawed individual. It's easier for me to provide guidance to my sons as a flawed individual who's had lots of experiences, some that worked out well and some that worked out poorly, because I've been there. I know what it's like. I can provide guidance for my children based upon my own struggles and successes.
I was perfect.
I think it's actually more difficult, more challenging. Now, he has more capability. He overcomes the fact that it's more challenging for someone who is seven-dimensional and who is infinitely more powerful and absolutely perfect and unflawed in any way, and who himself has never experienced what it means to be flawed, to relate to and to guide someone who is less than he is so that he can make them all that he is.
I agree with what you're saying, and the only thing I'd say to that is that I've never been a father before. And this is the first time I've done it.
Not many people
like
get, the first time I have a prior experience.
Well, exactly. And I can make mistakes. And, you know, and the reason why I bring that up is that if I make a mistake, it no longer just affects me. It now affects everybody around me. And that's a lot of responsibility to take on.
Let me put this in different perspective here for you. Yahweh became a father for the first time with Adam, correct?
Yep.
And he created Adam and Chawa. In fact, his first attempt was just with Adam. And he found out, that while that might have been wonderful for Yahweh, it wasn't completely ideal for Adam. So he had to come up with an addendum to his idea of being a father. I think I need really to be a father of a family where my siblings can also relate to one another. So it wasn't just Yahweh being father of one child, but the father of many children, right?
Yep.
That was kind of an addendum. He kind of if Yahweh had intended to have two children, male and female, he would have created them male and female right at the get-go. He didn't, did he?
No.
No. Now, when Yahweh experienced the degradation of behavior that his children conceived when they became overtly vicious in their religious pursuits, about 5,000 years ago, during the time of Noah, did he regret having conceived a man in the first place?
No.
He did. Absolutely did.
Oh, he did?
He said, I regret it. Yeah. He said, I regret it. I regret it. Maybe I shouldn't have done this. Look at the mess. Look how horrid this is. Look at what these creatures that I created to be part of my family and my children so that I could love them and they could love me and we could do things together. Look how rotten they have become, because I gave them choice. I gave them free will, and look how rotten, how vicious, how perverted they've become. This is really saddening. And he wiped out all of humanity with an Asama, save 8 individuals, didn't he?
Well, those 8 individuals. Yes, he did.
So Yahweh, in this process, because he gave us free will, which means that he's perfect, but he wants to make his creation perfect, but for that relationship to be the adoption where we both choose here, you have to make yourself susceptible to disappointment. Right? And he does. He makes himself susceptible to disappointment. That's, you know, part of the whole process. And was he disappointed? Yes. And if Yahweh, you know, controlled everything such that he wouldn't become disappointed, then there wouldn't be free will. So it's really important that we understand the implications of this. You know, Yahweh was a first time father too. It didn't go the way he wanted it to go.
Fair enough. And I'm not saying that I regret anything. I just say it's the most responsibility I've ever taken on in my life. And
but he did. He did. What I wanted to do is to explain that we all, that the human experience with a family is really the same as the as Yahweh's experience.
Kids don't change, no.
Yeah, I know. The whole process doesn't change. It's the same. It's related. Absolutely.
Adam and Shawa wanted the forbidden fruit. Neo wants
exactly.
The tablet. What is going on?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. So there you go. Once the and who makes that iPad? The company named after the bite in the apple, right?
Yep.
So we haven't moved. We haven't moved very far in the process.
Not at all. And it's the whole of the internet, which is the key to knowledge.
Yeah. So we're really back to the exact same position. Yeah, I was telling us about children naturally born and children adopted. And I'm just, well, the only thing I wanted to share is that, well, once a child is adopted into a family, there's no distinction between the children. And so I'm delighted to be adopted. They get all the benefits, all the enjoyment, all of the rights and privileges, all the inheritance of a naturally born child if you choose to be adopted. I just think there's actually some benefit. Being adopted, something I chose, he chose me, we came together by way of choice. And, you know, that's a marvelous way to go about it.
Well, it definitely is. It's much more agreeable at times. I mean.
Right. So that's pretty with this passage. Now, if you read your English translation of this passage, that is not what you're going to see. That's not how they translate these words. But it is what they mean. Now that we've considered it, I'd just like to share some insights. You know, and we talked yesterday about the fact that throughout Yahweh's testimony, 8 symbolizes eternity. The letter that was used to convey 8 was actually written like the infinity sign today. And that's why today mankind has just taken this concept and run with it and realized that Yahweh's symbol for infinity is the best symbol. And 8 is his symbol for infinity. It's why there is an 8-day celebration associated with the called-out assembly of Sukkah, of shelters, which is symbolic of camping out with God for all time. Additionally, the Hebrew word for 8, as we talked, Shemona, is based upon Shemon, which is olive oil. In the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, olive oil is used as a metaphor for the set-apart spirit because she enlightens us, she nurtures us, she anoints us, she heals us, she cleanses us. Olive oil is not only native to Israel, the tree from which the olive comes is among the 2 or 3 longest living trees in the world. That's interesting about the olive. They live for, in some cases, 1,000 years or more. We ought not be surprised in that we were designed by the author of this instruction. But it should be noted, as we shared yesterday, that the 8th day is the perfect time to perform this minor procedure. Excessive bleeding is minimized, as is infection, because human blood coagulates most effectively and has the most antibodies at this specific time on the 8th day. It's all there for us. We were designed for this, all built into the plan, all to help us understand and remember Yahweh's covenant. We'll return to his terminology and to Zakar, which shatteringness continues after this quick break. So, this is the second time in a series of just 3 statements about circumcision. And Yahweh telling us the circumcision will help us be observant. It will help us observe the terms and conditions associated with the covenant, and will help us remember the covenant. And as he's conveying that, this is the second time he's used Zakar, specifically in association with circumcision. Since the instruction is directed toward, though not exclusive to, young boys, literally Ben's sons, the reason for using Zakar only becomes obvious when you study the word's etymology. Zakar means to establish in one's memory, to remind, to remember, to reflect, to recall, and to memorialize something important, making it known. It also conveys the idea that truth can cleanse and purify, causing us to shine brightly and brilliantly. Ah, what a marvelous secondary meaning for Zakar. When we're enveloped in the set-apart spirit, her garment of light cleanses us, purifies us, and we radiate Yah's pure and brilliant light as a result. Light is eternal. Light is perfect. Light is empowers us, enlightens us. Moreover, each time a parent bathes their son, they will be reminded of their commitment to raise their children in compliance with the covenant so that their children become God's children. It's all there, right, laid out before our eyes. Now, especially relevant here is that there are two different classes of individuals to be circumcised, which signifies two distinct groups of people can become part of Yahweh's family. Abraham's direct descendants through Yishak, Laughter, and Jacob, the one who digs in his heels to steadfastly walk in the straight line along the path that Yahweh has provided and not waver left or right from it. And he became Yisrael, which means individuals who engage and endure with God. They are Yelid, naturally born into Yahweh's Bereth family. But since Yahweh has routinely promised that the benefits of the covenant would also be available to us, Goyim, people from different races and places, he has provided a provision for adoption. And that is what Kasap Mikna in this previous statement represent. Those deeply desiring to be acquired and included. It's from Nekar. They're not the word, but those of us who are being adopted are from Nekar, foreign lands. These are adopted children. Hiding this reality, most English Bibles base their translations of this verse upon the Masoretic text, where the KSP root of kasap, longing, is pointed kesep, money. As kesep mikna, the clause speaks of those who really want to be acquired and included. But as kesep, the order of things has to be reversed, and the mikna kesep becomes a string of nouns, acquisition money, which is then corrupted to read purchased with money. And yet, while the kesep mikna, really wanting to be acquired and included translation, is more consistent with the covenant and more informative, the mikna kesep vocalization does address adoption, and thus provides us with two distinct ways to be included into the covenant. Natural childbirth as a literal descendant of Abraham, and by choice through adoption. And thus both renderings are acceptable when viewed from the proper perspective. By chance, should you have an aversion to adoptive parents who value a child more than the child's natural parents, purchasing a child, be aware that this is exactly how Yahweh adopts us. He paid the price for us to live with him as his children. This is what Passover, unyeasted bread, and first fruits represent in our lives, in our adoption process. In fact, first fruits, Makotim, actually means firstborn child. Passover is the doorway into Yahweh's home to eternal life. And matzah is the welcome mat, which cleanses us so that we're prepared to be adopted. Shavua, then, the promise of seven, simply conveys the consequence of that adoption. We're enriched and empowered by our Heavenly Father and spiritual mother in the covenant at that time. So all of this is provided for us, whether we are naturally born or we are adopted. We have the opportunity to be part of the most wonderful family, God's family, and to live with Him in His heart forever, which is the symbolism now of the eighth day and of Zakar telling us that this is the way that we will recall this wonderful sign